Good afternoon. It's now noon, so I'll say afternoon. Technically, it's 12:10, so that is, if only a few minutes, as I drink this coffee after noon, which means the moments that follow. Good afternoon. It's still February the 25th, 2019, and I am in sparkly, happy, blue sky Seattle, Washington, and little Saigon, and nature and the universe it's smiling. There's a bit of a smile. It's a crack. I won't lie. There's a lot of sadness in the world, but today, little Saigon has a crack of a smile from a good-hearted hobo who lives under the bridge and grants wishes. Now, I don't believe that that's what the good-hearted hobos do, so please, by all means, be careful. But yeah, if you live in a Disneyland world and you imagine that everything has those really politically correct happy endings, then maybe you could go have a conversation with a crazy old dude under the bridge and everything will be fine. Anyways, since I'm technically viewer funded, listener, excuse me, listener funded, and technically since one of my people in my life, a sibling of mine, really helped me out recently and has made suggestions, including I shouldn't curse as much, and I'm working on that. One of the suggestions from a sibling was, why don't you tell more of these stories about growing up? Now, here's the deal. I got a suggestion also from a listener, but here's the deal. I'm not going to talk about Elizabeth Loftus and her work at the University of Washington. I don't even know if she's still the popular theory. But let's all admit, human memory is faulty. We don't remember everything. I don't remember everything. My memory's okay, but do I have photographic memory of every single moment of my entire life? I do not. And if any person had such a thing, I think their life would be a living hell. There is a kindness, believe it or not, there is a kindness, and people who suffer from PTSD know this. There is a kindness in forgetting, and if we're blunt, part of forgiving is allowing ourselves to let a memory go. Even if it means that the neurons say, you know what, this particular connection, it's not necessary. And the human mind is powerful. It's not like we forget everything. It's not like we don't remember things that are important. And again, this is assuming you don't suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of sadness around that issue. I don't want to talk about it. But assuming your brain works, you're going to forget stuff, but that's kind of good too. So yeah, anyways, if I tell these stories, keep in mind, it's the best of my ability, and I'm not going to write them down yet. But today's story, the title of today's story can be the time that Dan was hit by a car. And before I get into it, I'd like to introduce a couple quick memories. Here's a one weird memory that might be interesting, and it's true, and I'm not trolling, it's true. Jim Caviezel, the guy that played Jesus Christ in The Last Temptation of Christ, went to the same Catholic school I went to. That's a true statement. He barely knew me. I mean, I think he was a pretty cool dude. I think he is a cool dude. But he barely knew me. I was like some dude in the school. I was like, hey, and he was pretty cool back then. But back then, he was cool. He never stopped being cool. I mean this in a good way. I know he's a Christian and I know he's in Hollywood. So he is Daniel in the lion's den. You know, recently, I think Chris Pratt came out and said that. He felt like Daniel in the lion's den. I thought that was wow. You're like a pretty cool dude there, Mr. Pratt. But yeah, so anyways, Jim Caviezel went to the same Catholic school I went to, Immaculate Conception School in Mount Vernon, Washington. I graduated from there in 1980, I guess 83. The summer of, what was it? Not Dirty Dancing, but Footloose. The Footloose summer. Oh boy. 1983, Footloose. At our little summer formal, or I should say late spring formal, before we graduated from eighth grade in Catholic school, we had this whole Footloose theme. Anywho, I did have a conversation with Jim Caviezel once. It was at Brakefields. Now, Brakefields was in Mount Vernon, and it was a place where people lifted weights, okay, to get all buff and sexy. And it was 1991. It was during the year that I dropped out of the University of Washington. Very difficult year. If you understand the Lamentations of the Bible, you can say that was a year that that Dan wrote a book of Lamentations, if you want to think of it that way. And anyways, I was at Brakefields because my parents thought if I went to a, you know, whatever, a fitness center or some type of gym, it would help my attitude. And I don't know. But I ran into Jim Caviezel, and he could tell. I mean, here's the thing. He clearly can see people. He could tell I was depressed. Maybe he heard I was depressed. Here's the thing. It was a small town, and people had this notion about me growing up that was totally false, that I was like this really happy dude. Actually, I was a really unhappy dude who enjoyed being a hermit, and probably enjoyed being a hermit because of how unhappy and isolated he felt. That's the truth. I'm not blaming the world. That's not the worst way to grow up. And to tell you the truth, being a hermit kind of appeals to me at times. Most of you people seem totally crazy to me. That's brothers and sisters included. I love my sister and her family. They helped me so much this year, but I can't lie to you. I'm a dude who likes to hide out. So yeah, I was at Breakfields, and Jim Caviezel comes up to me, and he knows I'm sad or whatever. It could have been March or April, 1991. And he tells me, you know, I heard this song, this Don't Worry, Be Happy song, and I'm paraphrasing a bit. And he said, you know, Dan, it's a good song. You know, it's got a lot of meaning in it, a good message. And here's the thing. I think he meant well. I think his goal was to help me feel better, and I think that was a good thing to do. So, you know, the only thing I would have to say to Mr. Caviezel is thank you for being someone who cares. At the time, I was not really ready to hear it. And sometimes people are in that dark state. Read your Old Testament. Lots of people get into the darkness in the Old Testament, and it's a big part of their life, and God still loves them. I mean, I think God still loves me just because I have a bit of a darkness to me. It's not that I want to harm people, but I see things in people in the world. Maybe they're true, maybe they're false, but I see them nonetheless, and it can be, yeah, not so awesome. I talked to my brother-in-law about the theory of nuclear war yesterday over breakfast, and he was buying me breakfast. I mean, that's kind of like a shitty thing to do. And yet that's my mind, you know, start talking. It's like, I was, you know, we were talking about revolutions and warfare and, you know, Parsons and the turbine engine and a bunch of the British Navy chasing Turbini around and how technology can have these huge impacts and how the railgun, and I do believe this, the railgun for naval history is, I think that the railgun is about to make naval history. Not happy about it because I hate war. But the railgun could make naval history in the way that the torpedo boat during the Russo-Japanese War, okay, pretty much made naval history. And I think that's basically true. There was a revolution in military affairs that occurred, as the Soviets used to say, as the Red Army used to say. And the railgun for naval warfare, railgun plus hypersonics, if you put those two things together, gives you the ability to do more, to do something even bigger. You could replace your entire strategic nuclear force with super cannons. And the super cannons would essentially launch hypersonic projectile sabots. And then, so it's the hypersonics plus the super cannons, you're launching a nuclear attack on your enemy that instead of taking 30 minutes is like the 5 minutes we were scared of if the Russians had missiles in Cuba. Essentially though, the whole world would be almost like that. But here's the deal. That's a dark topic. That's a depressing topic. My ex-wife used to tell me to not talk about this shit. And looking back, I didn't quite understand. I didn't mean to be bad. I didn't mean to be dark. It wasn't like I wanted to hurt people. It's just the where my mind goes. So anyways, you know, God bless Jim Caviezel. But when I'm in a dark place, it's usually best just to leave me there. Good lesson for everybody, really. Not to say I don't like you knocking on the door. Knocking on the door is great. I'm a hermit who's 100% okay. If you want to knock on my door, I'll let you do it. And I will answer unless you're a son of a bitch, unless you're actually evil or I don't know. I have a hard time with grudges. I'm working on it. We all know this. But I'm definitely a hermit. So anyways, and then this other story is funny, which I will mention because it's not really directly about the Sullivan family. So the series of stories I'll tell, they're going to be about me and the Sullivan family mostly. So whatever. But this other story has to do with Glenn Beck. I don't know if you know who Glenn Beck is. And listen, this isn't a bad story about him, but Glenn Beck went to school, Catholic school, with my eldest sister. And when my eldest sister graduated from Catholic school, and I think it was 1977 or 78, Glenn Beck was the DJ at our graduation party, at our place off of Highway 20. It was held in the basement, and Glenn Beck had big puffy hair. I mean, he really did have the white man's fro, as I recall. I was 7 or 8, dude. I recall some things. I don't recall everything perfectly, but I remember he seemed like a pretty cool dude, and he was being a DJ. And actually, his music was cool enough. It woke me up, but in a good way. So I kept trying to go downstairs, wanting to, basically have fun with the adults. And yeah, I was 7 or 8, so no, Dan, you can't hang out with the eighth graders. Those eighth graders are 13. They understand crap. Some of them have had a beer. Some of them have hickeys. Anyways, though, Glenn Beck, the famous talk show guy, the famous network guy, good guy. I think he's a good guy. I don't know him personally, but he seems okay. This guy was doing the DJ stuff for my sister's eighth grade graduation party. So here's the deal. I wasn't doing this to troll these dudes, and I wasn't doing it to say, look how cool I am. But it is funny. Life is funny. I think that God has a sense of humor in a way that most of us never realize. He's brilliantly smart. Well, anyways, here's the story of Dan and the, I don't even know if I'm going to call it car accident. Let's call it the hit and run. Actually, this is a better story. Dan and the hit and run. So when I was growing up, there was a time when my dad made a lot of money. In fact, in today's terms, there were years where he made like $500,000 or more. It was just amazing. Did he save the money in the proper way? Did he always do well? Listen, how can I judge him? I'm a shitbird with money. I should be wealthy, and I am desperately poor. So no, I'm not going to judge my dad, but he did not spend money necessarily always wisely. But there was a time in the 70s when he made a lot of money, and so he could afford to have boats. He grew up on the Puget Sound. He was in the Navy during World War II. He loved the water. He really did. Dad was happy when he was at sea. When he was in his boat, he was really happy. Anyway, someone just buzzed me on my phone. I'm gonna pretend that I can wait on that. But anyways, he was really, really happy at sea, Dad, on his boat. And where was I going with that? Because I just got a call. Where was I going with that whole story? This is a really terrible thing about growing old. Anyways, the core topic of this podcast. Okay, anyways, he loved boats. So we had a boat. We had cruise homes. Okay, so the cruise home, how can I explain this? I think we had one or two boats I really liked in terms of their design. I never liked the cruise home. I'm sorry. I'm going to sound like a snob. My favorite old yacht from the 50s or 60s is the Chris-Craft Constellation, the 50 foot or whatever. Beautiful boat. I never owned one. We never owned one. So beautiful. I liked the one that had the raised stern, not the sedan for fishing, but the one with the raised stern that had a bigger cabin underneath, and you kind of like were up on your little patio deck, the Lido deck, the Lido deck, the Lido deck of the love boat. Anyways, my favorite yacht is the Chris Craft. I think it's called the Constellation, and I think it's about 50 feet, right? But we had cruise homes, and these things were around 43, I think 42 feet, and they really did seem like the family truckster from the original National Lampoon's Vacation with Chevy Chase, the family truckster. They seemed like the family truckster of the water. I never really loved them that much. They were more or less durable, but come on, I just never loved them. But then I'm being a bit of a jerk here. But he had a boat, and he had a couple boats. And we were at the yacht club. We had the boats at the LeConnor Yacht Club. And I love to fish, and I love to be by myself. Now, parents probably worry about kids who are 6 or 7. And I think this is when the story is from when I was either 5, 6, or 7. It could have been, I think it was 1976. I really do. It feels like disco. It feels like a disco lounge. So I'm 6 years old, and we just got in from a trip, and the boat is kind of, I think we just got in or we're going. We just got in or we're heading out. But we're doing there, the adults are doing stuff on the boat, and the older kids are helping the adults and getting yelled at. And I just snuck off, 6 or 7 to go fishing off the dock. Believe it or not, parents let kids do that back then. Hard to believe. Hard to believe. That's why you won't believe the story. Some of you millennials are going to listen to the story and say, how is that possible that your parents would let you go off and fish by yourself in the docks? Listen, I have memories of near drowning where I see some dude above me go, reaching in to grab me. And I have more than one memory like that. I used to fall between the boat and the docks. Listen, one of my great questions for God, actually, in some ways, my great proof for God is I'm still alive. Like, really, this is not a story. This is one of those stories where I could have died. Well, anyways, I'm fishing by myself, and Dad says, "Go put your stuff away." I think we were leaving because it felt like we were heading home. And he said, "Okay." He's like, "I'll go take my fishing tackle box and my pole and put it away in the car." So I'm walking up to the parking lot. I'm 6 or 7 by myself, off of the docks towards the car to put my fishing pole and my tackle box away because Dad, son of a bitch, anyways. And this dude is pulling out in his car and he hits me. He didn't hit me big time. Like, I wasn't like seriously injured. And you know, kids are flexible. I do think I remember that as a kid. I was way more flexible. You get older and the body just ain't as malleable as it once was. But yeah, I was hit by this car as the guy was pulling out. And here's the thing, as I recall, the Laconer Yacht Club had kind of a bar, you know, a place where people could drink, a smoky discotheque type bar. Bullshit about the discotheque, but they had a bar, I think. The yacht club had a bar. And this dude, I think, was drunk. I think he came out of the bar, he's pulling out, and I was 6 or 7, which we, what, how was I? Was I 3 feet tall? Was I 4 feet tall? I wasn't super tall. And guess what? Station wagons back in the 70s were huge. Gigantic. So the guy's pulling out of the parking lot and he hits me. And I do my little roll and my tackle box slides. I was smart. You always lock your tackle box. I've fallen so many times. Other than buy a ballistic vest, always lock your tackle box because you're going to trip and fall. So I tripped and fell, but the tackle box was fine and the pole was fine. And I kind of get up and grab my stuff. And then I actually just started moving away. I felt shaky. Like, I will tell you, if you've ever had your clock knocked, you know, when you get a contra coup concussion, when your brain, you know, sort of bounces back and forth in your skull case, a little bit of that happened to me last week when I tripped. That's an internal concussion, but your brain is bouncing around. Well, I felt the little vibration you get when you get shooken up, when it's like, hey, you got hit. So he did hit me. I think he must have, like, I think he could have been going 5 to 10 miles an hour when he hit me. And I did go a little distance. I grabbed my shit. I moved as quickly as I could. The dude got out of the car and he comes up from behind. He said, "Listen, are you okay? Are you okay? I need to talk to your parents." And it's like, here's the deal. My dad, I love him and I forgive him, but man, he could get angry as fuck about the stupidest things. And I had learned that lesson early. So I was convinced that I was going to get in trouble if my parents found out I was hit by a car. Listen, millennials, this was a different fucking day and age. This was a day and age where your parents might get, and I shouldn't beat up on millennials. I'm being a dick. Listen, kids, okay? But I think some of you kids know. Listen, people, we all know this. There are some parents that are like this, and maybe they still exist. And it's like, not only do they not care if you're getting into dirt clod fights, but if you get in trouble, don't tell them about it, or else you're going to get in trouble. It's like, you took the consequences. Take the hit. I could have waited for an older sibling to go fishing with me. I could have said, "Oh, can I hold the hand of my brother and my sister?" I didn't trust those people, my brothers and sisters. Are you freaking kidding me? I mean, I love them. They're my brothers and sisters. But when you're kids in a big family, yeah, it's a lot like that show Survivor. You got to know. And me, I had no allies. My only ally was loneliness, was basically finding some place I could hide. Yeah, that was my ally. But other than that, no, I didn't have any allies. And pain rolls downhill in a big family like anywhere else. So if there was physical abuse or any kind of abuse and someone felt upset enough to conduct physical abuse, which means a brother hitting a brother, sister hitting a sister, yeah, that all rolled downhill. We all ended up with some bruises. But we all, I guess, loved each other. We did have dirt clod fights. That's a story for another podcast. But anyways, I get hit by this car, this guy who was coming out of the Lido Lounge at the Laconer Yacht Club during the summer of 1976, because it smelled like 1976, but I could be wrong. I'm trying to walk away. I'm actually heading back to the boat. I got shook up. I was heading towards the car. Now I'm heading back to the dock. Maybe I was seeking out mom and dad, but only because I felt shook up and maybe they would help me with it. Let's say I tripped. You know, I tripped pa. I tripped ma. I don't get upset. But the dude comes up to me and he says, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think my dad talked to him. And in my foggy memory, I think my dad kind of looked at me and shook his head like, "Yep, Dan, What the hell? You're walking up in the parking lot by yourself at the age of six and getting hit by cars. That was a terrible incident. It was terrible enough to have a memory of it. So it must have been shocking. I think I was thrown a bit. But guys, if you've done anything, and I mean guys and gals, human beings, if you've done anything physical in this world, you know that sometimes you get your clock knocked, your clock rocked. It's kind of like what Mike Tyson said. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And so everyone, every once in a while, yeah, it's God's funny. Like, it's almost like, it's funny. When I was in the Army, I was in training once, and we were being trained about the Claymore Mine. And so I'm going to tell you a story, and it's related. And so we're sitting up in these, like, high school football stands, this big metal stadium, and all of a sudden, we hear this boom and a bunch of stuff hitting us from behind. Well, it turns out they had metal plate, I guess it was thick enough, maybe. Maybe it was a fake Claymore. But basically, they set off a Claymore behind us. You know, we were safe. That made a huge noise. You could hear a bunch of metal pellets hitting the metal wall of the football stands. And it was like, hey, wake up, wake up. We're covering the next subject is the Claymore Mine. Yeah. Army's like that. I don't know if it's still like that, but I bet Special Forces is. I bet they're still like, hey, that was a grenade, okay? If you're scared of those, you should not be here. I mean, I don't like the military. I don't like the Army. I don't know if I should have ever been in the military in the first place, but I'm not going to lie about it. That's a harsh and tough world. And yeah, when people do training, it's like, listen, dude, this is a grenade. It goes off. It will kill you. And that's the thing about the Army, is that they're big about keeping things simple, okay? Up to a point. There are some things that become total monkey fucks, but for the most part, Army management is about keeping things simple, keeping things with having low complexity, because high complexity just creates problems. A plan that's too complex does not get remembered. The sergeant doesn't tell it the right way when the sergeant does the operations order. So yeah, don't make your plan too complex. You're going to fail. Anyways, I don't want to go off on that tangent. But yeah, you know, that being hit by that car in 1976, life is like that sometimes, I think. And even if you're an atheist, you have to admit, it's like the universe is checking, are you awake? You know, we were cadets sitting in these stands. Sergeant throws a Claymore off, you know, Claymore, and we hear the explosion. Are you awake? God checks if we're awake, I think, sometimes. I really do. It's weird. And so I was a little kid, a little shit, and I was 6 years old thinking I controlled the world, or at least that part of it I could create in my imagination. And that was a big part of it. You know, FYI, we had like a Livingston rowboat, and I used to go out and just fish by myself when I was 7 or 8, out on the water in the Puget Sound, near Hope Island. Okay, 8-year-old kid in a boat by himself, listening to AM radio, listening to the Eagles, Hotel California, and thinking and wondering, holy crap, I think that's going to be my life. Yeah, guess what, 1978, Dan? Yeah, 79. You were right. So yes, if you know, these days, and maybe back then, you shouldn't just let your kids wander the parking lot. Yes, it is true that drunks do often leave taverns at yacht clubs. Walking behind a vehicle is not the smartest place to walk. Let's also say that. My dad was frustrated. He was. I knew he would be upset that I got hit by the car. But in a way, he was kind of right, you know? I should have known better. I thought I owned the world, so I could walk any fucking place I wanted to. And that included walking behind cars. So anywho, this is the first story in a series, I think, that I'm gonna create a new list for. And I don't know what I'm going to call it. I'll figure that out when I get done uploading the audio for this first one. But it's going to be about my family growing up. I'm going to try not to be controversial. There are always really terrible stories that should not be told. These will be mostly ones I don't think any of us be ashamed of. For example, I will tell the story of the Barbarino at some point. It is a great story. The story of the Barbarino, if you're interested in the anthropology of religion and theories and mythology, the Barbarino story is a good one. I'll probably have some honest conversations about racism because, yeah, I was raised in a kind of white, middle-class, existence. So I have to be honest about that. If you're not exposed to race, you really don't have a right to have a big opinion about it. So I will talk probably about that, but I'm going to try to keep things funny. Because there's at least one or two stories that deals with that. And yeah, I'll have to talk about the dirt clod fights. We got into dirt clod fights. Forget being afraid, helicopter parent, about whether a kid throws a snowball and it's really an ice cube. We would pick up dirt clods when our parents were at Husky games and get in a dirt clod fight. So there'll be a story about that. Yeah. And being hit in the head by my sister Nancy, who's now in heaven. I got a story about when I first met my first serial killers. I think they're serial killers. They might not be. But these kids who I think may have turned out bad. But I got a story about that. About you know, seeing the M80. And that's a great story. Anyways, these stories may not be good, but I've been told by siblings and other people that I should do this. And since technically I am kind of sponsored now by people, I do want to provide a little feedback. You know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. So sorry. I don't care if you pay me. I'm still going to speak my mind. But I also want to learn too. So have a great Monday. I'm still looking for work, but I hope to find some. And I hope you have a great rest of the day, and I hope that, you know, your path isn't so crooked.